This is Images. I'm Fred Martino. Thanks for being with us. I'm pleased to have with us today on the program Javier Benavides. He is with the Center for Civic Policy, and we're going to be talking about an issue that's really extremely important in the state of New Mexico. It's gotten quite a bit of action and attention here. It's also an important story nationally, although we haven't heard about this for some time. Actually, it got the most attention after the State of the Union address when President Obama proposed a national $9 an hour minimum wage. There are efforts to, again, in the state legislature in January, address this issue. And behind that issue, one of the groups is the Center for Civic Policy. Javier, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Fred. It's great to join you today.
Great to have you here. Well, you know, I want to start out with the basics on this issue, Javier. As I mentioned, the president proposed a national $9 an hour wage. Inflation adjusted, most experts peg the minimum wage at around $10.50. That's what they say that it should be if it was actually keeping up with inflation. Recently, fast food workers across the country actually called for a $15 an hour wage. What do you believe, and what is being worked on as to what the wage should be in the state of New Mexico?
Well, that's a great landscape of the conversation, Fred. Right now, we kind of experienced the perfect storm in New Mexico this past spring. At the legislative session on the national level, here locally, because we're based in Albuquerque, just a lot of conversations about the minimum wage. It's just really a bedrock issue that really defines our core values of how we value the work of hardworking people. We believe that hard work deserves fair pay, that workers are not just another cost of business like raw materials, that they're human beings with inherent basic rights. And so that's the core value that we took to the legislature to raise the minimum wage across the state, not just in places like Albuquerque and Santa Fe. That covers about half the state's population, but not places like Las Cruces or Gallup or Farmington. So we wanted to take it to the state legislature. It was a simple dollar raise, and it included indexing in the beginning, but then was kind of watered down to just be a simple dollar raise. Made it all the way through the House and the Senate, but then when it landed on the governor's desk, was unfortunately vetoed, and it happened on Good Friday this past year. And that was really disappointing that Governor Martinez, for her own reasons, vetoed a minimum wage that we thought could have made such a difference for New Mexico's desperate poverty. We've all heard the rankings. Right now we're ranked last in child well-being by the NEEKC Foundation. We're first in income inequality. The top 20% make 10 times more than the bottom 20%. And we've had some of the worst job growth across the West. So this would be a $67 million a year injection into our economy. Economists say it would have actually grown 590 jobs because of the increased consumer demand and consumer buying power. And it was just really disappointing that that was the end of the road, at least for that proposal.
So let's talk about January. What do you believe the proposal will be, again, if there is one, for the New Mexico legislature?
You know, we're leaving that up to the sponsors. They're realists about what's possible to get through the state legislature and onto the governor's desk. There's a lot of options we've looked at. One would be just pure indexing to look at, the value of the minimum wage since it was last passed in New Mexico in 2007. It started off at $2.50, then went up to $7, topped out at $7.50 in 2009. But looking at, if it had kept pace, like you said, with inflation, what would it be in 2013? Our calculations based on, they calculate the CPI at the end of every year, but that would bring it close to about $8.50 this next year. And so that's what we may be looking at, just the indexing. Another option is to get it on the ballot and just to, whether it be like a dollar raise or up to $9, just putting a proposal before the voters to amend the Constitution to have it keep either pace with an indexing or give it a dollar value.
Okay.
I should mention Senator Soles from Las Cruces was our sponsor this past time around. It was just an outstanding spokesperson for the issue.
Yeah, and I'm sure many of the folks who are listening right now have read his columns about this issue in the Las Cruces Sun News and elsewhere, because he not only talked about this in the legislature, but was very much part of a public information campaign through his writings about the issue.
That's right. And I think he was a great sponsor because he represents, southern New Mexico and Las Cruces. We also had Richard Martinez from Española, which is another area that's not covered by the minimum wage. But, we know that places outside of Albuquerque and Santa Fe are some of the areas that are struggling most in New Mexico and that just haven't seen, job growth, and a lot of small towns are suffering right now. And that's why we were excited to see a lot of action down south with the Las Cruces City Council around this topic. CAFE was very organized in getting some attention to that. They actually helped us a lot in the roundhouse during the session to get it through the legislature. And then also, it's great to see the Diocese of Las Cruces now beginning to take the issue up as part of its economic dignity campaign in Las Cruces. So we hope to see some action either at the local level or at the state level. But definitely, this isn't a topic that's going to go away. Wages just have not kept pace with inflation or with the amount of economic growth we've seen at the top, with Wall Street doing great, but those that well-being just doesn't transfer down to hardworking people who work full time, but still make, if you're making $750, you're making $15,600 a year.
Yeah, and that is at its very core, I think, what advocates for an increase in the minimum wage, both in New Mexico and nationally, say is that is it acceptable to work full time but not make enough money to actually have a decent living? I mean, to pay your basic expenses.
That's right. And, the population agrees with us on this, especially here in New Mexico. We've done polling. We know that 79% of New Mexicans agreed with our last proposal that we should have raised the minimum wage by a dollar at least. And unfortunately, in the state legislature, that's where it ended. But 66% of Albuquerque voters voted for that proposal this past year. It's just very popular. There was an interesting story here in Albuquerque with a small business that refused to pay the minimum wage. It was the Route 66 malt shop. And a lot of people just rallied to the support of the workers there. And it also came up when the mayor of Albuquerque, who unfortunately refuses to enforce the minimum wage, even though it's on the books and is a law, it's an issue that people understand. I mean, these are people who are showing up for work. They're not just hanging out, drawing down services. I mean, they're really working hard, but still, having to depend on a lot of services and living in poverty.
Okay. As you mentioned, Albuquerque voting for an increase in the minimum wage. Many years ago, Santa Fe leading the way on this with a so-called living wage, which is increases with inflation. This issue is not going away in New Mexico, even if this does not find success statewide. I understand a group called Working America has been very active in Santa Fe County to ensure that they have petition signatures to, again, press this issue on a countywide basis in Santa Fe County.
That's right, and it looks like they've got the votes on the county commission, and so this proposal would extend the minimum wage in the city of Santa Fe, which is now at $10.51. It's the second highest in the country behind San Francisco. This would extend the minimum wage raise out to the exterior areas of the county that aren't covered by the city. And what's exciting about that is there have been several stories in the newspapers just in the last few days that actually where they interviewed a lot of businesses, and it was interesting to hear that some businesses were concerned that they were losing employees who knew that they could go into the city and make more money there. We always talk about how Santa Fe was the only bright spot through the economic recession in New Mexico when it comes to job growth, and they've had a high minimum wage for quite some time. They were the first city, one of the first in the country to raise their minimum wage significantly, and we've seen the outcomes of increased buying power, more money circulated into the local economy, and now they're looking to extend it to the county. We also achieved that here in Bernalillo County, right outside of Albuquerque. So we were able to get the county commission here to just pass the law. This followed the election in 2012, and now that's going to be phased in as well. But it impacted another, I think it was 10,000 minimum wage workers when they passed that just earlier this spring.
Okay. Do you envision, Javier, if there is not a $1 increase in the state mandated minimum wage, that the local efforts that have occurred in the northern part of the state will make their way to Las Cruces and some of the other cities in New Mexico?
I can say most certainly. I would not be surprised to see some action out of grassroots organizations like CAFE, like the diocese in Las Cruces, because unfortunately, and for quite some time, Las Cruces was a thriving city, at the forefront of job growth and economic vitality. And unfortunately, just a month or two ago, we saw an article actually in Huffington Post. It was produced by 24/7 Wall Street. It talked about how Las Cruces has become the number seven city in the country for American cities where wages are plummeting. And so Las Cruces has really taken a hit with cuts to public sector jobs, and those jobs, even when they've been replaced, have been replaced by jobs that pay much lower, service jobs that where they do deal with these kinds of minimum wage issues. And so it's a significant issue, and I think it's a new kind of environment for Las Cruces, and people are just looking for some way to begin to address the desperate poverty that we see in counties like Doña Ana. And this is something that the governor could have addressed with just one signature. She could have injected $67 million into our economy. And all the concerns about businesses struggling and prices having to be raised, they just haven't played out we tend to see threatened. Economists spoke throughout the hearings on our bill in the Capitol. We had one Harvard economist, Dr. Sam Bowles from Harvard University in the London School of Economics, who has researched this issue in particular around the world. And like I said, it just doesn't play out where businesses end up cutting jobs. It typically means that working people have a lot more money to spend. And these are folks who don't save as much as the upper echelons. They actually re-inject this money into our economy at restaurants and local businesses. So it really is a positive effect on local economies like Las Cruces.
Another issue that comes up with this, Javier, and I've read this recently to a great extent from a number of analysts nationally who talk about the need to address low-wage positions across the country. In our economic recovery, what we are seeing is an interesting dynamic that that news reports recently have said that nearly 80% of the jobs that have been created have been part-time jobs, and many of those lower-wage service jobs. So would you assess from information like that, this is becoming an even bigger issue for the state and for the country?
That's right, and a lot of the minimum wage policies that have been passed have tried to get to the bottom of tipped employees also needing to see raises. Here in the, I believe it's the state, there's a percentage that they allocate for minimum wage workers who work off of tips. It amounts to 213. I think it's 30% or 40% of what the larger minimum wage is. But those are folks who, if they don't get tips, they end up making less than the minimum wage, and it's some of the toughest work around to work in the service industry, where it can be up and down. So a lot of the proposals that we've seen also address, giving a minimum wage raise to service workers, and those are some of the workers who are easiest targets, I think, by employers for wage theft. There was just a report done by Somos Un Pueblo Unido here in New Mexico that looked at the amazing amount of wage theft that happens under the radar, and New Mexico is one of the hot spots for that.
Another perhaps misconception that comes up when we do talk about the minimum wage, and an important issue for folks to understand, As I understand it, that the proposal that was passed by the state legislature in the last session and then vetoed by Governor Martinez, as it developed, there were changes made. And as I understand it, one of the changes was that it did exempt, if I'm not incorrect, younger workers who, if an employer hired someone who was younger, they wouldn't have to pay them an increased wage. Wasn't that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Senator Mary Kay Papin from Las Cruces was kind of the pioneer of that, I guess, exemption. We were realists. We realized that there was kind of a core group of about three or four senators that, in order to get the bill passed through the Senate, was going to be essential to water it down to their liking. But you know, we thought it was important to hold our ground when it came to the dollar raise. The governor also offered her own compromise. She said she would raise the minimum wage to $7.80, and that was a bill that she would guarantee to sign. But you know, in our perspective, we don't think 30 cents an hour that amounts to $12 a week makes much of a difference for anybody in New Mexico.
Right.
We're really trying to get to the bottom of the poverty that our state's facing, and that just didn't cut it. So,
right.
And, you know,
but I mentioned that exemption that occurred because, you know, as you know, many of the arguments were, well, you know, teenagers are just learning and they're not raising a family, et cetera, in most cases. And this was a compromise. In other words, this was, you know, the legislature doing what it could to try to pass a bill that was recognizing some of the complaints and concerns that were being made by some in the business community. And yet it still it was vetoed. I mentioned that for another reason, and that is another misconception that is occurring, that many people believe that most of the folks who work for the minimum wage are teenagers, and that's simply not true, that there are many folks who are older than 18 years old, who are out on their own, who are making either the minimum wage or close to it.
That's right, and I was scrambling to find you the percentage of adults. I know it's the vast majority of people who make minimum wage are adults, you know, with families. I know that at least one in five children in New Mexico live in a household where they would be affected by the minimum wage raise. And so Governor Martinez could have given a raise to those families, but she chose not to, and that was a tough thing to swallow for us.
Okay, well, I'm sure we're going to be talking with you again about the minimum wage in New Mexico, especially as we get closer to the next legislative session. A couple of more issues in our last few minutes together here. Another issue that you are focusing on involves a proposal to dramatically increase funding from the Land Grant Permanent Fund to early childhood education. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we know, and this is pretty common knowledge, that you know quite a bit of human brain development occurs before the age of five. It's 90%. This proposal has been talked about for several years now and has made it through a lot of the legislative session, but continues to die in one committee. That's the Senate Finance Committee that Senator John Arthur Smith chairs. And this proposal, it would allocate 1% of our state's land-grant permanent fund, which now sits at $17 billion. It's been talked about as a rainy day fund. Our perspective is that it was raining a long time ago and that you know our children are suffering. We have some dismal educational outcomes. And this was a way to invest in early childhood education that would just take 1% of that fund. The fund would still grow by double over the coming decades, even if we did this, and it would make such a significant difference to have $170 million in that fund to enable a lot of families to send their kids to, you know, to preschool and then to still go work at the same time. So it's an important issue that unfortunately has continued to die in the same place. And we're just asking people to get in touch with Senator John Arthur Smith and at least allow the bill to have a hearing. To this point, he hasn't even allowed a vote on the topic.
One other issue that may get a vote and may get a vote very soon involves funding for food stamps. I understand from your organization, 42%. 42%. This is interesting. Of New Mexico children depend on food stamps, and there could be a vote coming up in Congress very soon. And you're doing some accountability work on this.
Yeah, we're asking people to contact Representative Steve Pierce. He tends to side with the folks who want to cut these benefits. And like you said, 42% of New Mexico's children depend on these benefits, SNAP benefits, in order to just have basic meals. I mean, to be able to show up to school and not be hungry. This is 215,000 children we're talking about here in New Mexico, a state with the highest rate of child hunger in the country. That's going to be talked about in Congress just actually next week when Congress reconvenes in Washington. And we just want to ask people to contact Representative Steve Pearson, ask him to do the right thing for New Mexico. We're a poor state. Unfortunately, we have the worst child well-being in the country. And this is just one benefit that makes a significant difference for children and also for our economy. For every $1 increase in SNAP benefits, about $1.70 are generated in economic activity. So it's an important thing and important to our state's future leaders.
Okay, just about 2 or 3 minutes left, and finally I want to give you a chance for folks who aren't familiar, Javier, with the Center for Civic Policy, where you work, about what your organization does in addition to advocacy work on these important issues and how you're funded.
Well, thank you so much, Fred. This has really been a great conversation. We are a nonprofit organization. We're based in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We do work all around the state with partner organizations, organizations like CAFE in Las Cruces, Working America. We focus on issues that are important to addressing our state's dismal poverty, improving our democracy. We think our democracy functions best when there's high participation. And unfortunately, we just haven't seen that kind of participation from specifically like certain groups, like people of color, young people, and women are often underrepresented in our elections. So we work to engage them. We do a lot of polling, message framing, communications. It's all nonpartisan, so we can never endorse candidates. But we just think it's important to get people engaged in our state's democracy because that's the way we're going to begin to address some of our serious problems. We're funded by organizations that contribute to this kind of work all across the country. Kellogg is one of them. The McCune Foundation has been a big supporter. Other organizations that are particularly interested in particular campaigns around public policy. We get limited support for campaigns like the SNAP work that we're doing right now or early childhood education work.
All right. Javier Benavidez, he is with the Center for Civic Policy in Albuquerque. Javier, thanks for joining us on Images.
Thanks so much, Fred.